Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Freakazoid and Friends, where the insanity never ends. Just as he defends, you're sure to get the bends from Freakazoid and Friends. Such extra because Freakazoid, he does his super stuff. He battles Mo, Bengal, Kirk, Beast, and villains who are true. Like Kendall, Jack, and Cobra King, Cave, and Candy, Jack. Yes, and my moron, I am too, and that's about enough. It's Freakazoid and Friends. It's what your dentist recommends. To patients who chew gum, this show is really dumb. It's Freakazoid and Friends. Meet Dexter's girlfriend Steph and his mentor named Mitch too. The Rivery and Fanboy, the gnomes are part of crew. Cosgrove and the Huntsman, Tucky Ninja Sue. And don't forget there's Freakazoid, a lovely shade of blue. It's Freakazoid and Friends. A show that no one comprehends. Our longevity depends on our demographic trends. It's totally freaky, Dexter's geeky. The plots are weaky, we're up the creaky. We're strong and leaky, Freakazoid and Friends.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and it is so good to be back from yet another unplanned vacation. Yes, and I'm sure all of you are asking, since I've been away for about a month, what happened this time? Well, that is a very funny and long story. See, I got this email from my friend, Zach, a.k.a. Spider Dude. You may have heard him on the Clone Saga Chronicles and the such. Anyways, he said he had this business opportunity for me, and he sent me these plane tickets, and I ended up in Nigeria, of all places. And got in some pretty sticky situations, let me tell you. I am just glad I am such a good-looking individual and I had to use my masculine charms to get out of that one. I'm sorry. That's not what happened. That's a different story. Long story on what that story's going to be. It involves Chuck Norris, OxyClean, and a dead horse. Don't ask. As for what actually happened, you know, that whole little diatribe is completely understandable concerning what our series is about today. But anyways, actually what happened is what usually happens. February. Because February hates my bleeping guts. I'm doing my own censoring today because I'm not in the mood to censor. Anyhow, no, it's February. For whatever reason, all this shit happens on February. It just does. Whether it be viruses on the computer, it always happens in February. A family member losing a job or knock on wood, having a heart attack happens in February. So it seems like everything likes to happen in February, as it did this year with a family member having a mild cardiac attack. Catastrophic heart failure. For what, for those who know, that's when, for certain people, water gets around the heart, which can cause it to stop. My family member is fine, so I wouldn't be joking about it otherwise. That, and then of course, what happened at the beginning of the month, which was, we here in New Jersey had a lot of snow. Snow caused the power to go out. Power is out for about 12 hours. When power came on, and I tried to turn my computer on, computer wouldn't turn on. Which means I had to go to Best Buy and get a new power source, which is basically what happened. So, I lost my computer for about 2.5 weeks, and had to get a new power source. I want to thank the guys at Geek Squad. They actually did a great job. I know a lot of people have had some bad experiences with Geek Squad. I personally have had nothing but good experiences with Geek Squad for the most part. So, you know, it is what it is. I'd rather have somebody, you know, again, I have that whole Geek Squad, your $200 a year thing, where they'll fix things, and all it costs is the price of the product. So they'll put it in, install it for free, and that type of stuff, and diagnostics is free and everything. So, you know, I might as well take advantage of it, because I'd rather they try to fix it, because if they break it, then they have to buy me a new one. If I try to fix it and I break something, I'm having to spend an extra $500, but again, that's here or there. So I just want to thank them for getting my computer fixed. I'm glad to have it back, with a stronger power source, mind you. So hopefully that won't happen again, but I digress. On to today's episode is about. Well, as you may remember from the last episode, I kind of hinted at the end and everything. Actually, it's kind of funny. I was going to postpone doing this series until the 1st of March because I had gotten behind and it started to be February. And so I decided to dive right into Disney month and then do this series on the first week of March, and then of course I lost my computer and everything happened, and so I'm right back where I started. Anyways, today's series is a beloved series that I have been looking forward to reviewing for the longest time. It is a series that we all remember from the 90s that we loved, and we loved watching it on Cartoon Network. And it is part of that whole Steven Spielberg era of animation that Warner Bros. Did that was so great. And led ratings in the mid-90s. You know, part of that group of the Animaniacs and Tiny Toons and Peaky and the Brain. And of course, in saying all those three, I'm leaving out the one we're covering today, which is, of course, the much beloved Freakazoid. Yes, it is time for us to review Freakazoid! I've been looking so forward to this. And you know, the funny thing about it is, it's also interesting to go back and look at it, especially considering now that I'm going back to school and I'm in cinema classes and, you know, looking at camera work and stuff that works, you know, applying that new knowledge to certain things, which definitely helps. So you may actually be hearing me use some new terminology that I haven't used before. Which some of you might say, yes! Yes, new terminology for him to screw up. Anyways. So Freakazoid is our topic today, and why don't you say we get right into it, because I have no emails. Because nobody cares. Nobody cares how lonely I am. Nobody cares about my sorrow. But I digress. I'm a complete idiot. Anyways, which again fits the theme of our show. So let's get right into synopsis. And as far as synopsis is concerned, we follow Dexter Douglas, nerd computer ace, who was surfing on the internet one day and it got zapped into cyberspace. He turned into a Freakazoid then and gained strength and super speed. And now he drives the villains crazy because he's a lunatic. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Freakazoid. Super Teen Extraordinaire, Freakazoid, Freakazoid. Runs around in underwear, Freakazoid, Freakazoid. Says he's watching the PC, Freakazoid, Freakazoid. Tell us something better on TV, Freakazoid, Freakazoid. Brains go for those, it has to chop some slowly. Freakazoid, chimpanzee, battle around in a freak army. And welcome back, and let's get right into it, as we always do, with music. And, oh man, the music, I really enjoyed the music of this series. Again, it was that very classic cartoon of, like, it had some original music, it had safe, free domain music. A lot of music usually integrating with the jokes, which was done extremely well. As far as the opening theme concerned, which is obviously the most famous of anything that Freakazoid has music-wise, it's just a great song. It's a catchy tune. It, you know, catches a tear. You find yourself singing it. You know, it's obviously, as I sort of quoted in the synopsis, but, you know, it had that sort of big band, I want to say almost scat type of a feel to it, which I loved. As far as, you know, the scat musical style, which sort of a jazzed, big band influenced musical style. You know, you think of, like, Zoot Suit Riot would be, I think, maybe a great example of that. And it sort of had that same feel to it, as far as a, sort of a jaunchy, so almost that sort of 1940s jaunchy theme to it. And again, it also had that sort of classic 90s cartoon song thing of, you know, basically telling you the simple plot in the story. Yeah, as I said with the synopsis, everything you need to know was in that sort of those lines. And then the catchy tunes and the rhythms there that really worked with the song that I personally enjoyed. It's just such a catchy tune, and I love singing it. It's one of my favorite cartoon theme songs of all time. It's just a joy to listen to. And the music in the rest of the series was a joy to listen to. There's just some, you know, the overall sort of instrumental sound and themes were enjoyable. They worked very well. But also some of the sort of show tune numbers that they had in there. I'm trying to remember some of the more lesser favorite ones. There's the When You're a Hero That Nobody Wants song, you know, from the episode where, you know, Globe tricks Freakazoid into not stopping him. There's the demon song. The one, oh, I'm trying to remember the name of the, oh god, I should know this artist's name. Oh god, I know it too. Oh damn. I'm sure people are gonna, okay, let me correct that. People aren't going to email me, but I'm sure my friends will tell me on Facebook just how much of a complete ass I am for forgetting the name of a classic musician, something Lewis, or Louis, and I'm blanking on it, and they actually parodied him twice, or they parodied a musician like him, but I'm talking about the Dino. When you're girlfriend is a demon who shoots fire from her nose. That song, as I'm digressing here, is very fun to listen to. Obviously, I also made mention to it, but my favorite little show tune in there is Wanja Lobi da 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 Lobi da da da. To make people scream, ah! Bonjour, lobby da da da, lobby da 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 da. Give me food, waiters, sweet fountain food, waiters. Lobby's had a hearty appetite. It's just a fun. Oh God, I love this. It is absolute fun. We're just going to put this big sort of show tune number into the piece and have just fun with it. And oh my god, it's just a great thing. Dexter State is one of my favorite episodes. I love the comedy, and it's a sort of classic storyline done to perfection. completely taking away the fourth wall, which we'll get to the fourth wall with this series in a little bit. But yeah, that's one of my favorite little show tunes in there. And the music, for the most part, all works. It's all enjoyable. It's all fun. You know, like I said, for the tunes to, like, the instrumental, you know, the Huntsman song. Hunt, 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 it's the Huntsman. Off to venture is his game. Call the sun, call the, blow the horn of urgency. Da, da, da. Call the Huntsman. Off to danger is his call. Hunt. And I know I completely screwed up the lyrics, but it's, again, these songs are all catchy, and they're all fun to hum and sing in your mind, and it's just wonderful. And of course, they also have the free domain songs that, you know, work well with the comedy they do. With that, let's move on to animation. And again, let's start off with the overall style of animation. Again, it's that classic sort of Steven Spielberg animation, you know, so it's the same people who did Animaniacs, it's the same people who did Pinky and the Brain, it's the same people who did Tiny Toons. And it is nice to see that progression of their craft. If you watch all those series and see the progression of them, you know, getting smoother in their line work and everything, obviously it's different from something like Disney. Warner Brothers here would be more of the angular aspects of the styles, as opposed to Disney, which is more sort of rounded. But, you know, you still have the cartoon aspect to it. Moving on with character designs. I mean, let's start off with Freakazoid. Now, obviously, we have to tackle the controversy that entitles Freakazoid's design and its comparison to Mad Men, which was a comic in the 90s. I want to say Image. And I'm completely blanking on the name of the artist, and I apologize. And obviously, if you see the two images, the comparisons are obvious. You know, Paul Dini and the animators on Freakazoid even said that Freakazoid was hugely influenced by Mad Men. At that point, I think that's where I'll leave that controversy alone. And part of the reason is, I've never read Mad Men. I really haven't. And to me, for something to really be copied, you know, I'm of the opinion you can have something look like something else all you want. But as long as there's something original there, especially in particular to the story, it's not ripping off, as far as I'm concerned. And again, I just haven't read Mad Men, and therefore I don't feel like I can make a decision on whether they really just ripped them off. Outside of just sitting there saying, you know, that they obviously were very influenced by Mad Men's design, because it is amazingly similar. So in that aspect, it is very obvious that they took that from Mad Men to an extent, even admitting as such. But I think, as far as what the show is about and everything, I think that's a whole nother story. But with that being said, it's a great design. The primary color, you know, the red and the blues work well, along with the white in there, and the yellow, the whole yellow F with the exclamation point, I thought was great. So yeah, it is, the color scheme, the primary colors there worked really, really well. So in that sense, and just all the character designs for the most part were just very fun. It allowed for just fun characters. You know, Roddy McStew, I thought just a fun looking design character. Cosgrove was a fun looking design character, and all the villains, the very playful way they did villains. Like, well, we're going to do villains. Obviously, a lot of these villains are going to be based off sort of classic villains from characters. So how do we do interesting, you know, the Loeb. The Loeb is this big-brained mad scientist. But his head is literally just a brain. But not in that cartoony way. You know, Longhorn, who is this, basically this giant bull. Cave Guy. And Cobra Queen. Just all these villains, I thought their character designs were just fantastic and very creative. while at the same time following the same codes and conventions of what they want to do with those characters. I think with that, we then move on to the action animation. And I guess when I say action animation here, there's not so much. I mean, the action for the most part is simple, and it is well choreographed, but I'm talking about camera movements. I'm talking about, in this case, it would be comedic timing, placement of the frames and everything. And all of that was done extremely well. In regards to the pace and the timing of jokes and everything, you know, the use of cuts and fades and everything like that to fit with jokes. And I think that's the great thing about the animation is the sort of comedic animation here was absolutely wonderful. They fully embraced the comedy that they were putting on screen, and so like when they would transform into other characters and do impressions and things like that. It all worked very, very well. And it was just fun. I mean, for the most part, it is just the sort of great comedic cartoon stylings of Steven Spielberg and company, which did wonders for Warner Brothers in the 90s. And then you have the backgrounds and special effects. And, you know, say what you want about it. It's, you know, again, it's very simple work here. The backgrounds are very simple. The special effects themselves are very simple. Not blowing their budget on it at all. mind you, they make jokes about the budget in the show. There's just, so, again, comedy is going to be the big aspect we're going to get to when we get to it in the story. But for the most part, I enjoy the animation. If anything to say about the animation as far as the criticism is that it's very typical of the 90s, which, you know, say what you want about that. But, you know, again, it works. And as long as it works, it's fine. It's when it doesn't work, it's when it feels rehashed and boring that it doesn't work. There's nothing here in the animation that feels boring, rehashed, or anything like that. There are some original designs there, albeit, you know, parodies of things. You know, for instance, the hunter guy. The character, the villain that's based off the Predator. It's so based off the Predator. But it's done in, a very creative way, a very comedic way that works very, very well. So, I thought the animation worked very, very well, overall. With that, it is time for a break. I'm going to play some promos of people who do so much better job than I do. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hello, boys and girls. It's your dear old Uncle Joker. We've got an internet access here in Arkham, so I'm doing a little browsing. Lolcats, lolcats, porn, lolcats. What's this? Bailey's Batman Podcast? A bi-weekly podcast devoted to everything Dark Knight Detective? Well, Michael Bailey, where's Bailey's Joker Podcast, eh? We'll see about that. Harley! Get our things! We're going to Georgia!
Hey everyone, Michael Bailey here asking you to check out my bi-weekly internet radio show, Bailey's Batman Podcast. Or at least I'm asking you to check it out while you still can, until the Joker shows up on my doorstep. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a hodgepodge-type show where I discuss all aspects of the Dark Knight's history. Comics, movies, animation, even trading cards and action figures. Everything Batman-related is fair game, and yes, that does include the villains, which includes the Joker, so he won't kill me. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.baileysbatmanpodcast.com. The site also has links to the iTunes page, the RSS feed, my Twitter handle if you're into the social media thing, and the Bailey's Batman Podcast Facebook page. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a proud member of the Batman Podcast Connection, which you can find at batmanpodcastconnection.wordpress.com. I really hope that's the UPS guy. Why can't I have Batman in my basement?
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet, are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
The Schuster Herald Podcast,
It's Superman,
The Carazerald Podcast,
The Armature Steel, a John Henry Allen podcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and
Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Sam Rizzo,
Danny Sapp,
Matthew Epps,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
Yeah, play it. Come on. Play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic. Foolish emotions. A constant irritant.
Intense freak!
Two!
Along the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit.
It's a super prize package worth $9,388.
Money.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head. Punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow! Go away, Baden!
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Thank God damn, lucky he didn't kill all of them.
and Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
Looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now, come on,
hey,
let's
God,
go.
She likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julia, shut up!
I say shut up! It's a man home! A man home!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
And welcome back, and it's time to get right into it with acting. And, of course, that means it's time to go over our cast list. So, we have Freakazoid, played by Paul Rugg, with David Kaufman, voicing Dexter Douglas. The legendary Ed Asner as Lieutenant Cosgrove. Candy Milo as Stephanie, or Steph for short. Craig Ferguson as Roddy McStew, and I've forgotten that he's been acting that long. You had Ricardo Montalban as Armando Gutierrez. David Warner as The Lobe. Jeff Bennett voicing Cave Guy, Lord Bravery, and The Huntsman. Tress McNeil as Cobra Queen and Mary Beth. Maurice LaMarche as a Longhorn. Tim Curry in a guest role as Dr. Mystico. Stan Freeberg as Moron. And, of course, Jonathan Harris reprising his role from Lost in Space as Professor Jones. For the most part, I thought the entire cast did a great job. Let's start with the protagonist. And obviously that means starting with Paul Rugg, who did a just absolutely wonderful job as Freakazoid. You know, obviously channeling a bit of Jerry Lewis in that character. I very much enjoyed, you know, he was just so generally funny throughout the series. And just made me laugh so many times. All the other supporting, you know, Craig Ferguson was awesome as Roddy McStew. You know, again, another character that every time he was on screen made me laugh. And again, a lot of that also has to do with good writing. Again, it's for this reason why, again, the central piece, I think, of this series was the story. And I think the actors didn't have to do too much. I didn't think the animation or the music really didn't have to do too much. Though they did, I think, go beyond that. But still, the writing was so great, as we'll get to, that it lent itself to that most of the work was already done. But that being said, like I said, Craig Ferguson, I thought, did a great job as Roddy McStew. And same with Emilio and, of course, the legendary Ed Asner. It is always fun to listen to Ed Asner, and just his great acting ability, I think, was on display here with his comedic timing. You know, the whole bit with Cosgrove of, like, he'll point to a villain, like, hey, cut it out! and Ed Asner's great Ed Asner voice makes that little comedy beat work so much. That comedy beat would not work with any other actor. So those are the things I think the actors brought into it, is that they brought their own little beats that made each character work so well. And then you have the antagonists here. All of them just working so well. You know, David Warner as the Lobe was just awesome. He did a great job as the Lobe. Jeff Bennett as the Cave Guy, as this sophisticated, elitist, snobbish, caveman. Neanderthal, I should say. That's the word I was blanking on. Was brilliant. It was I subscribe to the New Yorker. Oh, God, he just that choice to go into that complete, just sophisticated, elitist, uptown Manhattan voice just was wonderful. And I think a great thing that this series did, as we'll get to with comedy, is the bringing in of sort of, I guess you'd call them guest voice actors for certain characters, like the legendary Ricardo Montalban, you know, Fantasy Island, you know. And for you kids who don't know what Fantasy Island is, you'll know after I say, the plane, boss! That is Fantasy Island for all you little kids. And he played Ricardo Montalban played the main guy on there who's gonna make all the fantasies come true. Tim Curry's Dr. I will praise anything Tim Curry does in animation, because it's always wonderful and fun to listen to. And mind you, that entire episode was just fun, filled with, you know, we had Tim Curry, you had Leonard Maltin in that episode. Steven Spielberg did some guest spot, but Leonard Maltin did just... that was a fun episode. To Jonathan Harris, again, as, you know, made a joke reprising his role from Lost in Space as Professor Jones. Obviously, that was not his role, but again, that being the whole bit, is that every time he's on screen, everybody's like, weren't you in a science fiction television show? And again, that lends itself to sort of the great comedy of the series. That's a great segue into it, because the acting was great, and let's get into story as well, and the central aspect of what the story is about. It's comedy. It's all about making people laugh, and laugh hard, and laugh a lot. And it comes down to the comedy, and the comedy, if I had to put the comedy in a way as far as it's breaking down the fourth wall, but that doesn't really do it justice. To really truly describe the fourth wall in Freakazoid, you would have to say that Freakazoid comes in on a wrecking ball and destroys all the fourth walls. Yes, I went there. I absolutely went. Just let me know when you're done groaning. It's what I'm here for, to make you groan, to make that stomach hurt. Yes. Yes, my pretties, feel me with the power. Anyways, no, it's just the comedy, and it all works, and it's just everything. Like I said, from the guest spots, these characters that, you know, again, Freakazoid of the three series, if you look at it in this way, you know, you had Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, and Freakazoid. Animaniacs was for everyone. It had stuff for adults, it had stuff for kids. Not that this show didn't have anything for kids, mind you, but there were a lot of just simple kids stuff. I mean, there were certain, because there are usually three episodes, or three little segments, an episode in Animaniacs, there'd be a segment that was mostly for adults, there'd be a segment for kids, and there's a lot of times segments that were, there was comedy in there for adults that only adults would get. There's comedy in there that kids would get, and so on and so on. Then you had Pinky and the Brain, which to me was always more of the kiddie version and really more geared towards kids. Really in that vein of sort of Tom and Jerry to an extent, but in this case, just only mice. But then you had Freakazoid. Freakazoid was for adults. Freakazoid was always meant for a more mature audience. And again, it's a sign that sort of Hollywood has never, ever been able to evolve past, like, well, we have this show, and we're trying to target this one group of people. It didn't capture that group, but here's this other group of people that's just as many, and it's doing successful with them. And this audience that we didn't know we could get with it is watching it. Oh, it's still a failure. Well, and that's the thing I think Hollywood needs to fix, because that shouldn't be a failure, that should be a success. It's just an unintended success with a different demographic, and therefore you should target that demographic. Which Warner Brothers didn't want to do at first, but thankfully Cartoon Network accepted it, and it flourished and got a second season. And I really wish it would have gotten a third season. because I think there was so much more, obviously, they could have done with Freakazoid. But, you know, again, it all goes back to the comedy. A lot of the comedy is breaking the fourth wall, making jokes, making references to stuff that, to be quite honest, kids mostly wouldn't know. Characters they wouldn't know. And just all these little segments, like Lord Bravery, this superhero trying to be a superhero, and nobody wants him. And just the silly things, you know, the whole, I can't call myself Lord Bravery, the whole sort of parody, and I'm trying to think of the word, and I apologize, but that being a sort of conversational piece on how stupid are, oh god, I can't believe the, infringement system. Well, I don't understand why I can't think of the word. Copyright. That's the word I was trying to think of. Copyright. I can't believe I blanked on that word. But the copyright system, you know, he can't call himself Lord Bravery because there's a Lord Bravery Bakery and people might confuse the two. It's like, what am I supposed to call? How about Lord Smoked Fish and Fishes? Or Smoked Meat and Fishes? I can't be Lord Bravery and Smoked Meat and... Or Lord... Excuse me. I can't be Lord Smoked Meats and Fishes. What type of superhero calls himself Lord Smoked Meat and Fishes? One that's ahead of his time. Like, I'm not calling myself, you know, that whole, and him going down the line, like, well, you can change it, yours, and you can change it. I'm like, so, don't you get it? But I like my name. Oh! Ethan Fossum! that's those segments were the Huntsman segments, which were essentially, there's no crime. Here's this superhero so good that there's no more crime. It's a brilliant idea that's so fresh, even today. What does a superhero do when there's no crime? How does he handle himself when there's no crime? And the Freakazoid segment just Freakazoid himself, just hilarious, and the different things he would do. As I may mention, the whole Dexter's date, you know, I talked about Loeb's song. The whole premise of that episode being that, you know, Freakazoid, after battling the Loeb, of course, gets away after one of Loeb's machines affects him, and it's causing him to not be able to freak in, as it is back to Dexter Douglas. And he who's on a date with Stephanie. Imagine how that whole thing, like, how the date even happened. Like, you know, when this happens, I'll go on a date with you. And sure enough, it happens. Which, girls, that should teach you a lesson. Never make a promise that your mouth can't check. Or that you can't, you're, never write a check that your mouth can't cash. I'm going to get it right one of these days. but... Yeah, it just, and that, and they're like, have a good time, dear. It's like, all sort of cozy convention and cliches there, but they're like hyped up to make it hilarious. And that's just such a great episode. And just, the classic Universal Monster episode, where it's Freakazoid versus the werewolf. Oh my god, is that so hilarious. It's just a joy to listen to. And the comedy all worked, whether it's breaking the fourth wall, making references. It just all works. And the thing about it is it's all generally funny. It just is. It's honest to good, generally funny. And it makes you laugh hard. And it's what makes this series work so well. Now, another thing that really makes the series work is the simple narrative, because you have sort of two different episodes that come up in this series. You have the sort of multi-segment series where, you know, you have a simple 5-minute segment, you know, as, or 10-minute segment, as when, you know, that may be the main segment of the episode, like with the Universal Monster, where it's just a simple sort of fun story of the Universal Monsters coming to Or it's just the werewolf comes to try to figure out Freakazoid can help him remain unchanged. And I said that, and all I could think about was the sort of changing sequence in the episode where the show of the werewolf is that classic universal wolfman change, and then Freakazoid changes, and they do the same thing with him where it's slow, and just the different images, that is a great, great little comedic bit there that I love. But you have episodes for instance, the first episode, or the episode that's sort of themed around aliens, and aliens continuing to invade America. And of course, Bill Clinton's like, what do you think they want? I don't know, Bill. By the way, your secretary's calling you. By the way, that's not in there, but it'd be hilarious if that line was. But then you have sort of the episodes, like I said, there may be a second smaller ending segment, but for the most part, there's really one big segment there. Or it might be split into two. Again, it's two segments as opposed to three. And there's sort of main segment. And again, that simple narrative that's centered around, of course, Dexter Douglas being a superhero. And it gives us the simple basis that the comedy can launch itself off of. That works very, very well. And there's some great sort of simple storytelling episodes that, the comedy's there, but the story is fun and it does get you into the characters. I think of, the origin story, because there's origin, the Chip, part 1-3, and then the next episode is the Chip, part 4. Again, a whole play on the sort of movie sequel aspect. And that whole thing of it's a movie. And the comedy is able to bounce off all of that and work so well. And by the way, it has one of the most honest explanations of how the movie rating system works in that episode. I swear to God. So it allows for things like that. I mean, that and the whole I want to say it's the final episode of season one. I want to say. It may not be. I can't remember. But, when Freakazoid loses his powers and he has to go in and he has to face the maze. And face Armando, who's become a Freakazoid. I am not a weenie! I can talk about the comedy all day. I gotta move on. And really, it's just that simple narrative allows the comedy to bounce off it and to launch off it. And again, it gives it that honest feel. And another thing that helps it is that each episode does have a sort of simple pace that works very well. I never get tired of watching this series. I never do, and it is because of the pace. The pace is just done perfectly. Once again, by the way, Take Another Shot, which, again, by the way, reminder, tune in the next episode when I'm finally going to have the Tom Sprogative drinking game ready. By the way, Tom Sprogative will not be held responsible for anybody being drunk under the table or any hospital bills they may incur. Last but not least, I think I want to talk about Freakazoid's influence. The fact of the matter is, Freakazoid has had a huge influence on me, and it had a huge influence on a lot of people. To this day, if I have my phone on vibrate and it goes off, I so desperately wish I had the courage to turn to somebody and go, "Sorry, madam, I had my phone on vibrate my bottom," which is lifted straight from Freakazoid. So obviously it has a huge influence on me. But I think especially for those of us who are the Toonami generation, these series of shows, Animaniacs, Tiny Toons, Pinky and the Brain, and Freakazoid, all had a huge influence on the type of comedy stylings that we do like. It's also what helped launch ourselves towards liking a lot of different comedians and accepting of a whole lot more comedians of different nationalities and colors and all of that, because again, these different ideas and these really wacky comedies really lend itself towards that happening. So, I think Freakazoid is a hugely influential piece as far as 90s cartoons are concerned. So at the end of the day, what rating do I give Freakazoid? Do you really have to ask? It's a 5 out of 5. This is a great cartoon show that is laugh out loud, and you don't stop. You start laughing at the start of the episode, you don't stop laughing until the very end. And it's one of those shows that's just so much fun to watch over and over again to find all the new things that you may have missed. So at the end of the day, Freakazoid, 5 out of 5 for me. It's just a joy to watch. So that is it for this episode of Tom Prerogative. A bit short today. Not the usual full hour length, but I digress. Remember that if you have any comments about, you know, my views on the episode today, anything you want to say, remember there are several ways to contact the show. You can contact the show by emailing to absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to www.facebook.com, and searching for the Absolution Network. We are the one with Tom on our front page. And leave us a comment. Like us and leave us a comment there. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. You can also make sure to check out all our other 132 Productions content that you can find. This, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network, the Shaft Plus podcast, which you can find at www.shaftplus.com, the Comic Book Crazy Podcasting Network, which features Comic Book Crazy and Hexcast, that you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com, and of course, my Tokyo SOS podcast, that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And also, while you're there, look at the sidebar of our site to check out all our friends on the sidebar that do great stuff. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Seichler's Major Spoilers Podcast, and, of course, Scott Gardner's 2-2 Freaks, along with many others on the sidebar of the site. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, since we didn't have it in February, we're going to have it in March. Next week starts Disney Month! Yay! So, all through the end of March, we are going to be celebrating Disney by reviewing Disney movies. And I have some special things planned. So we're going to have some extra episodes. So, until next time, my Toonami generation. Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.